Chairman, I would like to introduce Mr. Stephen Mayne, registration number 612, to the meeting.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman. I've also been frothing about the font. It's unbelievably what you're doing with the font sizes in this report. But look, Jack said everything that needs to be said on that. I've got a couple of questions on your debt situation. I understood that the investment banking business had about $95 billion of debt in it, most of which was non-recourse and associated with each of the assets. This transaction, you see on page 96 that the non-banking assets will have, the non-banking subsidiary will have $18.4 billion in assets and $15.2 billion in liabilities. Then we've got this question of the bank trying to raise close to $20 billion as part of this. But there's no description about what particular assets we're talking here. I was just wondering if you can actually put some flesh on those bones. Is this related to, you know, the fact that we've become effectively the world's biggest private equity firm or the world's biggest owner of infrastructure assets, and we've got to raise all this incredible amount of debt to refinance some of the loans on those assets? Is that what some of this $20 billion will be used for?
Well, let me try and respond to those two questions. Firstly, I don't know where you get the $95 billion. I assume that's some form of aggregation of the debt in the various funds. None of that is changed one bit by this reorganisation. The funds continue to be managed. They continue to borrow. They continue to loan assets. But they are not affected in any way by this reorganisation. The new borrowings that are going to be put in place are basically $8 billion. In addition to which the bank will fund on a temporary basis a further $20 billion to the non-operating holding company to facilitate the transfer of the assets from the bank to the new non-bank group. But in terms of net new borrowings, it's only $8 billion, and that of course will be used to acquire assets and or repay other liabilities as they fall due.
Is that effectively a securitised value of the management agreements? I mean, the biggest asset within the non-banking business is those massive management fees, performance fees and base fees that we get. Is that what's happening here? It's being sold and this $18 billion relates to the valuation of that?
Would you like to just run through? I mean, I think...
On page 46 of the explanatory memorandum, there's a pro forma balance sheet of the investment bank, and as you mentioned, it's got about $18 billion of assets. The major types of assets in there are some loan receivables because the investment bank does undertake some loan activities. There are some lease receivables. There are some investments in our own funds, and there are some investments in seed assets. They're the types of investments that the investment bank in particular does. I'm not sure where the $95 billion that you mentioned to, but the investment bank also does, as a manager, manage a vast array of both listed and unlisted infrastructure funds, which have their own separate balance sheets, which are quite outside that of the bank. So what we end up with, and the figures in the explanatory memorandum are pro forma figures based on the 31st of March accounts, so that they're not updated for subsequent events, including the capital raising that the bank did. But so what we have, to make it simple, is that the entire group has about $140 billion of assets on its balance sheet. That's the assets on the balance sheet. If you look at the bank's annual report, you'll see. About $120 billion of those assets stay in the bank. About $18 billion, as you've mentioned, go across to the investment bank, and those are the types of assets that I've just mentioned.
The $95 billion figure actually came from your own briefing document on the investment banking business. When that short seller Chanos and Ed Chancellor had a crack at you, there was this document that you put out briefing everyone, and it said there's $95 billion of non-recourse asset-associated debt. But there are times when you do these infrastructure fund deals where the bank will provide bridging finance at times. So where I'm just a little confused is where that $95 billion figure fits in, and where the figure fits in terms of where the bank is actually financing some of the funds. So, you know, just the delineation between the two.
The bank has, I'm not familiar with the $95 billion figure, but the bank has under management some $230 billion of assets in funds that it manages. Some of those funds are in conventional equities funds, some of those funds are in infrastructure funds, some of them are in property funds. The funds themselves, which I mentioned, are both listed and unlisted. I'm guessing a bit, but it would be maybe $70 or $80 billion of assets in the infrastructure funds, and they in turn, those funds have their own debt arrangements, and the figure that we have published is that the average gearing, that is loan liabilities to total assets in those funds, are of the order of 60%, which is probably a conservative ratio in regard to the assets, but they're all outside the group's own balance sheet, therefore not reflected in these figures.
The thing I'm a bit nervous about is I'm an investor in all these funds as well. And you've talked about the fact that the investment banking business will have a lower credit rating because it's moving outside the MBL structure. And I think the 20-odd million we're talking about in higher borrowing costs that we're going to suffer probably on an ongoing basis is partly because of that loss of the banking license and the implied guarantees that go with that. So in terms of the extra funding cost that us MBL shareholders are going to suffer, is that just relates to MBL? What about all the other funds and that $95 billion of debt outside that previously people perceived was within the tent? I mean, is there going to be a slight increase in our borrowing costs across the whole group, or is it just confined to within the bank?
The borrowing cost in the funds we don't expect to be altered at all by this arrangement. In fact, we've refinanced a number of those funds recently at cheaper interest rates than have applied in the past. It's true that the cost of the annual cost figure that I mentioned, $90 million a year, is a negative. The positive is that we'll be able to do things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to do, and we think that the benefits far exceed $90 million. But $90 million is the estimated extra cost for the next operating year because the investment bank will pay more for its money than the bank. And that's, the bank is a licensed entity and will be rated as it is at present.
And just this last question. I think we tried to raise $18 or $20 billion as part of this process, didn't we? And we've only managed to raise the $8 and we've now got to roll over the $10. Greg's shaking his head, but we've now got to roll over the 10 over the next 2 years. Where was this debt previously funded from? I mean, obviously we're now transferring a debt that was somehow in-house that's gone out $8 billion, and now we want to try and raise another $10 billion from out there. Where was all this funding previously sourced from? And how did it suddenly come that we had to try and raise $20 billion? It just seems a staggering figure. That suddenly just came from nowhere almost.
The basic principle under which APRA operates is that the bank and the non-bank must operate as largely standalone entities. To achieve that, we do need to put in place additional borrowings, which can't be borrowed through the bank. They have to be borrowed separately. Obviously, if the bank doesn't, once the bank sells its assets to the non-bank, it doesn't need to finance that. So somewhere in all of that, short-term deposits of the bank will be repaid if everything else changes and stayed unchanged. But we're not necessarily going to borrow the lot because we won't necessarily need the lot, but we have available $28 billion to finance the non-bank, and that will all be financed in a way that's not possible at present, because at present we use the bank to finance some of those assets.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to reintroduce Mr. Stephen Mayne to the meeting.
Just briefly, Chairman, I just want to try and get some more clarity on this issue of the debt. Let's talk about Macquarie Infrastructure Group and Macquarie Airports, which are our two biggest listed funds, which are both cashed up, very strong. And
Mr. Mayor, this is a meeting for
but I want to understand about the rationale behind this. So how much capital do we have to tie up inside Macquarie Bank? So what does APRA make us do as MBL because of MIG and MAP, our two biggest funds? Like, how much of a straitjacket are we in from operating MIG and MAP?
Right, except to the extent that assets being held on the balance sheet for eventual transfer to MIG or MAP, which I don't think there are any at the moment that I'm aware of, not at all. It's more in other, it's when we buy seed assets for a fund, it's stockbroking, it's, there. I mean, I've read out a whole range of activities where the growth of the bank will be, the only way we'll be able to comply with APRA under its present rules with the current structure of the bank would be to stop growing.
Okay, and I'd just like you to...
And the board regards that as an unacceptable alternative.
Yeah. Final point. Can you actually give us some examples of assets that are currently on the balance sheet that will be transferred over, that will therefore liberate us in terms of our capital that we have to hold, etc.? Can you just give us some examples?
Great.
What's happening is that the Macquarie Group Limited will buy effectively the assets of the non-banking operations from Macquarie Bank. That's where the 8 plus the $10 billion of financing is financing. That's what, and the money will go back to the bank and be used to either be invested in cash or retire liabilities for the bank. That's why there's no net change in the group's debt. The types of assets in the non-bank are the types of assets that are set out in the pro forma balance sheets on page 46 of the explanatory memorandum, and they're the types of assets that I mentioned before. The non-bank, for example, is an active participant in lease markets. It leases everything from trucks to aircraft assets. So there's those types of assets. Then it has it does have a loan portfolio of its own. It then has an active business in financial products for individual investors, and in addition to that, as the chairman said, it from time to time buys seed assets that are held on the balance sheet temporarily, either as part of corporate finance transactions or to seed new funds. And then the final type of asset that is on that balance sheet is the bank's investments in some of its own funds. You mentioned MIG and Macquarie Airports, both of which are separate listed companies in their own right. The bank has no material investment in MIG, but it does have a significant shareholding in MAP, essentially, because we think that's a very good investment for the bank shareholders to make.
I just got a sense that it was this transaction, was this complicated, expensive transaction, which has ongoing costs for us, was it really necessary? I mean, there was an ability, you've just raised $750 million of capital, you've become the world's biggest owner of infrastructure assets, and arguably one of the world's biggest private equity firms within this structure. So you've got to where you are without having to change anything. You could have sold down your MAP stake from 20% to 10% and realised a few hundred million dollars if APRA was yelling at us about capital. So, I mean, I've just never heard of a particular transaction or a particular growth you couldn't do. Like, did APRA literally stop you doing things? You had these great plans and APRA, the regulators came along and said, sorry, you can't do that. Did that really happen?
APRA never stops you doing individual transactions. What they stop you doing is exceeding ratios and limits. And there is no doubt that our growth would have been constrained by APRA's rules if we had remained purely a bank with all the assets and all the liabilities in the bank structure. We would have been becoming breach of APRA's rules within a relatively short period, like 12, 18, 24 months. Something on that order.
Okay.
So the board has looked at the future and said, we don't want the growth to be constrained because that's not in shareholders' interests. We want to continue to be able to do the things we've been doing and earning the profits and growing the profits. And the current structure will not allow us to do that.
Because if you've been constrained whilst you've become the world's biggest owners of infrastructure assets, I think we all better hang on to our hats as to what's going to happen now. Anyway, thank you for your forbearance. You.